Today is Monday, May 31st, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Achebe, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden vows to confront President Putin on human rights.
I'll be meeting with President Putin in a couple weeks in Geneva, making it clear that we will not stand by and let him abuse those rights.
Plus, ECOWAS suspends Mali over coup.
The decision was made during an emergency summit held by leaders of the 15-member economic community of West African states in Ghana's capital, Accra.
Also, WHO calls for unhindered access for aid to Gaza. Our top story today is in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden on Sunday said he will press Russian President Vladimir Putin to respect human rights when they meet. The White House said it was planning to move ahead with this summit between the two leaders after Microsoft flagged a cyber attack on U.S. government agencies by Nobelium, the group behind last year's SolarWinds hack that originated from Russia.
I'll be meeting with President Putin in a couple weeks in Geneva, making it clear that we will not stand by and let him abuse those rights. Folks, we're unique in all of history. We really are. But those names that's on that wall and every other wall and tombstone in America of veterans is the reason why we're able to stand here. We can't kid ourselves about that. And so I hope that the nation comes together. We're not Democrats or Republicans today. And on my first Memorial Day as Commander-in-Chief, I want to reaffirm my long-standing belief. We may have many obligations as a nation, but we only have one truly sacred obligation, and that's to equip those we send into harm's way with all they need and care for them and their families when they return home and when they don't. And all of us who remain have a duty to renew our commitment to the fundamental values to our nation in their honor. The values that have inspired generation after generation to service and that so many have died to defend.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. President Joe Biden visits Tulsa, Oklahoma this week as part of the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre. The visit comes as the United States reflects on its legacy of slavery and racial violence. Michelle Quinn reports.
At a time when many Americans are discussing race, President Joe Biden will visit Tulsa Tuesday to be part of the commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre. The city is expected to resume the excavation of a suspected mass grave for the bodies of some of the more than 300 people killed in the violence. The trigger for the massacre was the arrest of a 19-year-old black man accused of assaulting a 17-year-old white girl. The events of 1921 resulted in the destruction of Tulsa's Greenwood District, a prosperous part of the city that included what was known as Black Wall Street. Only in recent years has the story of what happened been shared more widely. Viola Fletcher is a 107-year-old survivor of the Tulsa Race Massacre.
I still see black men seen being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams. I have lived through the massacre every day. Our country may forget this history, but I cannot.
Last year, the three living survivors of the massacre filed a reparations lawsuit contending that the city of Tulsa, Tulsa County, the state of Oklahoma, and the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce were responsible for what happened. Questions remain over whether reparations should be paid and how much to survivors and descendants. A new museum commemorating the massacre, Greenwood Rising, is opening this week. Plans for a concert were scuttled when negotiations about payments to survivors and descendants reportedly broke down. Some officials say marking the 100th anniversary of the massacre is especially important now, coming a year after the death of George Floyd, a black man, in police custody in Minnesota. The incident sparked months of protests in cities nationwide and around the world, and spurred many, including Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma, to consider racial inequities that remain in American life.
Little did I know the events dealing with race that would happen in the last 12 months, and the awakening the nation really has had to what is still left undone in the issue of race in America.
The Tulsa incident was the deadliest racial massacre in U.S. history, according to the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, adding that the people of Tulsa and the nation are still reckoning with the massacre's legacy. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
North Korea's state media on Monday criticized the recent termination of a pact between the United States and South Korea that capped the development of South Korea's ballistic missiles, calling it a sign of Washington's, quote, shameful double-dealing, unquote. Brian Wood reports.
North Korea's state media on Monday slammed the termination of an agreement between the U.S. and South Korea that limited South Korea's missile range. Korea's official KCNA news agency quoted an article written by described international affairs critic Kim Myung-chol, accusing the U.S. of shameful double-dealing. The pact limited the development of South Korea's ballistic missile program to a range of 500 miles. South Korean President Moon Jae-in announced an end to that deal after his first summit with U.S. President Joe Biden earlier this month. Kim criticized Moon for welcoming the agreement's dissolution. He said, quote, "The termination is a stark reminder of the U.S.'s hostile policy toward the Democratic People's Republic of Korea and its shameful double-dealing." He said Pyongyang will counter the move.
More Afghans who worked with British forces, mostly as interpreters, will be allowed to relocate to the UK under a program announced by the British government. Accelerating earlier resettlement policy, the program would mean that any current or former locally employed Afghans considered to be under threat to life will be given priority to relocate to the UK with their immediate families. The announcement comes as British forces plan to leave Afghanistan for good. UK Defence Secretary Ben Wallace.
Look, I wouldn't classify this as evacuation. This is allowing people a route to the United Kingdom for safety. The people that have helped and supported the British Armed Forces and the British government over the many, many years in Afghanistan who feel they are in danger. And it's absolutely right we stand by those people. It's my duty as Defence Sec, I believe, to do the right thing by these people. And when they come here, they will be supported. And I very much hope the British population also supports them, because these people have taken great risks often to protect our men and women of our armed forces. Some have been under considerable danger, which is why we were the only nation already to have in place a scheme linked to bringing people who could demonstrate the threat back to the UK, and we've already resettled a few hundred of those people. But, you know, with the changes now, with the Western powers leaving Afghanistan, the threat is increasing and has increased with targeted attacks against Afghans by the Taliban. So we think it's the right thing to do to stand by these people. They sacrificed a lot to look after us, and now we're going to do the same. This scheme will not close. It will be open indefinitely. But it's in the hundreds of the people that helped us. But when you add in the families, it's over 3,000.
That's UK's Defence Secretary, Ben Wallace. Ethiopian pro-government demonstrators denounced the United States on Sunday for imposing restrictions on aid over the Tigray conflict at a massive rally organized by the authorities to show support for their positions. Maha Abdadrawi of Reuters reports.
Ethiopian pro-government demonstrators held a massive rally on Sunday, denouncing the United States for imposing restrictions on aid over the East African nation's conflict with neighboring Tigray. More than 10,000 people attended the rally. They carried banners written in English, Arabic, and Amharic, with slogans like USA, show us your neutrality, and Ethiopia doesn't need a caretaker. The demonstration was larger than typical pro-government rallies, and public criticism of the US is rare. A week ago, the US imposed sanctions on economic and security assistance to Ethiopia over the conflict. Washington also said it would bar current or former Ethiopian or Eritrean officials it deems responsible for the crisis. Ethiopia is facing increasing international pressure over the conflict in Tigray, where it and neighboring Eritrea sent troops last year to oust regional authorities.
That's Maha Abdadrawi of Reuters. West African regional bloc ECOWAS on Sunday suspended Mali's membership in response to last week's coup and said authorities must stick to a timetable for a return to democracy, but stopped short of imposing new sanctions. Jason Albano of Reuters reports.
West African regional bloc ECOWAS suspended Mali's membership on Sunday after the country's military overthrew its leaders last week, the second such coup in just 9 months. The decision was made during an emergency summit held by leaders of the 15-member economic community of West African states in Ghana's capital, Accra. Mali's neighbors, as well as international powers, fear the country's political instability could undermine a regional fight against Islamist militants. The country is a home base for regional affiliates of Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Assimi Goïta, a Malian army colonel who led the last coup in August, ordered the arrests of both the president and prime minister last Monday. The pair resigned while imprisoned and were later released. Goïta was declared president on Friday. ECOWAS did not call for the new interim president to step down. It also did not impose any new sanctions like they did last August. Instead, it said a new civilian prime minister should be nominated. Ghana's foreign minister, Shirley Botchwe.
One of the decisions of the heads of state is that they should ensure that in the next few days there is a civilian prime minister who will form a government, a transitional government, work with ECOWAS to ensure that the transition is on track towards the end goal, which is to return the people of Mali to democratic rule.
In a communique after their summit, the bloc said Mali's plans to hold elections next February should be, quote, absolutely maintained. While Goïta attended the summit, he gave no immediate comment.
That's Jason Albano of Reuters. The World Health Organization is calling for unhindered access to Gaza to provide essential medicine and medical treatment for Palestinians caught up in the 11-day Israel-Hamas conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Violent clashes in Gaza between Israel and the extremist Islamist Hamas group have killed hundreds of people, injured thousands, and caused extensive damage to infrastructure, including health facilities. The World Health Organization says 30 health facilities were damaged, including the destruction of the Hala al-Shawa primary health care clinic. It says Gaza has just 46% of essential drugs and 33% of essential medical supplies in stock. UN officials who recently visited Gaza warned damage to the territory's wastewater infrastructure has resulted in large volumes of untreated sewage water being discharged into the sea, creating health hazards and pollution. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib says it is critical that border crossings between Israel and Gaza be opened to allow regular access for humanitarian, medical, and development supplies into the Palestinian area.
WHO is calling for unhindered access for humanitarian and essential supplies and staff into Gaza, and the passage of referral patients out of Gaza. As this referral can be really life-saving, we have around 600 referrals that were affected due to the closure of the crossing during the escalation.
Shaib says the 600 people who need to be evacuated for treatment in an Israel hospital include patients who suffer from chronic illnesses such as cancer and those who were injured during the recent escalation of violence. The WHO is appealing for $7 million to provide essential medical care in Gaza over the next 6 months. Its priorities include trauma and emergency care, mental health, and psychosocial services. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America. China's ruling Communist Party says it will ease birth limits to allow all couples to have three children instead of two in hopes of slowing the rapid aging of its population, which is adding to strains on the economy and society. The ruling party has enforced birth limits since 1980 to restrain population growth, but worries the number of working-age people is falling too fast. Turkish state media says Turkish agents have captured a nephew of U.S.-based Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen in an overseas operation and have returned him to Turkey, where he faces prosecution. The Anadolu agency says Selahattin Gulen, who was wanted in Turkey on charges of membership in the terror group, was seized in an operation by Turkey's national spy agency, MIT. The report did not say where he was seized. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Far-right party leader Naftali Bennett threw his crucial support on Sunday behind the unity government in Israel to unseat Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in what would be the end of a political era. Yahira Jaquez of Reuters reports.
The leader of a far-right Israeli political party on Sunday declared he would join with a centrist faction in a new unity government that could spell the end of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's 12-year grip on power. Naftali Bennett, who leads the ultranationalist Yamina party, said he was convinced that only an alliance with centrists and left-wing parties would save the nation.
I am announcing today that it is my intention to work with all my strength to establish a national unity government together with my friend Yair Lapid, so that, God willing, together we can rescue the country from its tailspin and return it on its path.
Centrist Yair Lapid's Yesh Atid party finished second to Netanyahu's right-wing Likud party in the latest inconclusive parliamentary elections. Lapid has worked to cobble together a potentially volatile coalition. A power-sharing deal would see Bennett and Lapid take turns as prime minister. Israel has held four elections in the past 2 years, none of which delivered a clear winner and left Netanyahu in office as head of a caretaker government. Bennett was seen as something of a kingmaker between Netanyahu's push for a right-wing coalition and Lapid seeking a national unity government. On Sunday, he said he made the best choice for his country.
En memshelet yamin.
There is no right-wing government. 4 rounds of elections and 2 months proved to us all that there simply is not a right-wing government to be led by Netanyahu. It's either a fifth election or a unity government.
Netanyahu responded on television calling the proposed coalition a, quote, left-wing government and a danger to Israel's security and future.
That's Yair Adikers of Reuters. The World Health Organization is asking for 20 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine for African countries to administer second doses to those who have received the first shot. Lisa Schlein again reports for VOA from Geneva.
After 3 weeks of declining rates of COVID-19 infections in Africa, the World Health Organization is reporting an increase in cases. It says its latest figures of more than 4.7 million cases, including 128,000 deaths, indicate a 17% rise over the previous week. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says she is concerned, but that it is too soon to tell whether Africa is on the cusp of a third wave.
While it's too soon to say if Africa is seeing a resurgence, however, we're seeing increases in a number of countries, we are monitoring the situation very closely, and we see that we are balancing on a knife edge. So this makes the rapid rollout of COVID-19 vaccines all the more important.
Moeti says South Africa accounts for nearly one-third of the 65,000 new cases reported by WHO. She says she fears new variants of the virus circulating in South Africa may be spreading into neighboring countries. She notes Namibia and Zambia are among 11 African countries experiencing more cases. So far, 28 million COVID-19 doses of different vaccines have been administered in Africa, a continent of 1.4 billion people. Moeti says Africa needs at least 20 million second doses of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine by mid-July to give everyone who has received the first dose full immunity.
Africa needs vaccines now. Any pause in our vaccination campaigns will lead to lost lives and lost hope.
Moeti appeals to countries that have vaccinated their high-risk groups to share their excess doses with Africa. She notes France is the first country to donate tens of thousands of doses to Africa from its domestic supply. WHO says the European Union has pledged more than 100 million doses for low-income countries, and the United States has promised to share 80 million doses with lower-income countries. Other wealthy countries have said they will follow suit. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Record number of COVID-19 vaccinations have been completed in Australia as the snap 7-day lockdown continues in the nation's second most populous state. 7 million people in Victoria are subject to a strict stay-at-home orders after a growing cluster of infections was detected in recent days. Australia has managed to mostly contain the coronavirus through lockdowns, the closure of its international borders, and strict quarantine measures for returning citizens, but the national vaccination program has been beset by supply issues and hesitancy among many Australians. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
There are estimated to be 100 active coronavirus cases in Australia, according to the health department. About half are in Victoria, which is under a 7-day lockdown. It's the state's fourth shutdown since the pandemic began. The number of infections in Australia is small compared to other countries, including Japan, Brazil, and the United States. However, community transmission of the virus has been rare in recent months, and the outbreak in Victoria is significant. There's been complacency in the community and mounting hesitancy about vaccines and possible side effects, which have delayed the national inoculation plan. Health authorities in Victoria, though, have said the lockdown has sent residents flocking to injection centres across the country in record numbers. However, some experts believe that it might be too late to prevent another wave of infections in Australia's second most populous state. Dr. Michelle Ananda-Raja is an infectious diseases expert at Melbourne's Alfred Hospital.
We've been here before. I think, though, that the stakes are higher this time because we have all the factors for what is essentially a perfect storm. We have a largely unvaccinated population, we have winter approaching, and we have an unforgiving variant on the loose at the moment. You know, Victoria is primed at the moment for a third wave, and we need to do everything possible to prevent that from happening.
Melbourne, the Victoria state capital, endured Australia's longest COVID-19 lockdown last year. Once again, the nation's second biggest city finds itself under tight restrictions. Masks are now mandatory. Places of worship and schools are closed. Victorians can only leave home for essential work, shopping, exercise, caregiving, or to get a coronavirus vaccine. Businesses are facing heavy losses. A man infected with a highly contagious COVID-19 variant, who stayed at a quarantine hotel for returning travellers, is thought to be the source of the outbreak. Australia has recorded just over 30,000 coronavirus cases and 910 deaths since the pandemic began, according to government statistics. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The global economic recovery from the pandemic faces multiple headwinds, including lack of vaccines in poorer countries. That's according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The OECD said there will be a strong rebound this year and raised its forecast. The Paris-based organization now foresees growth of 5.8% after last year's steep downturn. Most of the world should reach pre-pandemic levels by the end of 2022. U.S. relief programs and government spending have played a role in getting growth going again. But the global economy remains under threat from new variants and outbreaks in countries that don't have enough vaccines. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mark Villabarro, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international.